Thanks for joining us for episode 8 of season 5 of Couples Inc., a place where we help couples work better together.
The first and third Wednesday of each month, we drop episodes with advice, tips, and real-world experience for partnering in business and life.
I'm Glenn, a business owner and communication strategist, and I've been obsessing about oxymorons lately. Things like uninvited guests, new traditions, dry lakes, and standard options. They're causing me to get highly depressed. As a sidebar, I used to work next door to a company called Standard Abstract.
That really does kind of mess with your mind a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. That sign every day. That explains a lot.
Explains a lot. I'm Jody, Glenn's partner in life and business. And in the past, when I've started a new job, people would say, oh, you're the new Janice or you're the new Chris. And then I would correct them and say, no. Janice or Chris was a rough draft Jody.
Ooh.
I want to make sure they were clear.
Yes.
I'm not the new them.
Yes.
They were the rough draft me. I am.
Perfected. On today's show, we discuss partnering with other small businesses and then talk about employee handbooks with attorney Mary Buckley.
And at the end of the show, we talk about, or should we say, shine a light on, some of our insights from the recent eclipse.
Yes.
Now, without further ado, let's get started with this episode of Couples Inc. For today's topic, we wanted to discuss partnering with other small businesses.
And in some, even competitors?
I was going to say, and in some instances, that might mean competitors.
Mm.
But you know what? Say that again and let's do a gasp sound.
Okay. Even competitors?
That's great. That's great. Really, really emphasize the point.
Yeah.
But that is
Thanks
true.
Thanks to our studio audience.
Yes. Now do the applause sign and you know, we're good to go.
Thanks. Thanks, everybody.
I love our studio audience. They are the best.
Yeah. Come back tomorrow.
When we were talking about this idea, it made total sense. Like, yeah, you might be able to partner with another business. That's a compliment. But then we started thinking, well, you know, there are actually instances where competitors do this well.
You mean complimentary?
Yeah, what'd I say?
It's a compliment.
Oh.
Nice business. Hope you go bankrupt.
They are complimentary, but they do compliment. Now, one's with an E, one's with an I.
Oh.
Remember? Well, okay, the way I remember this is I like compliments. So the one with the I is flattering.
What does the E stand for?
It completes something.
Completes something.
So it complements something.
Mind blown. This segment is over.
You learn something new every day.
Whoa.
Compliment with an E, other businesses.
As opposed to compliment.
Yes. That's one way to remember it is I like compliments, so that's where the I. Little sidebar, stationery. The one with ER is for paper. ER, paper, stationery.
I will never remember that.
Well, why not?
I never use that word.
Well, that's true. Using stationery versus stationery. You're always on the move and you have nothing to write on.
Yeah. Just, you know, stopped writing a long time ago.
All right. So partnering with small businesses, we wanted to look at some reasons why that's important and then ways to do it. And we wanted to, again, emphasize it's with a business that may have nothing to do with you, what you do, what you share an audience, or you share a space, you know, a geographic space, or
customer base,
or it could be a competitor.
Market.
So anyway, so let's talk about why a small business might want to consider doing some sort of partnership.
Yeah. I looked it up online, as I'm wont to do.
As you are wont to do.
Yeah. On the Inc.com site, there are three. Well, there are a lot of them, but three that I thought really stood out for the reasons. And number one, strengthen the local community.
Hmm. Yeah. I think there's a lot to be said. Like when you see things like American Express shop local campaign, or you have small cities that have done those small shop local events or other things. It is to strengthen the community because research shows when businesses, like money is given to local businesses, it is more likely to stay in the local community. And when you partner with another small business, you're strengthening the community.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of ironic that Amazon has started to pick that up over the last 10 years or so, their business model, so that they'll have these contractors that fulfill some of their orders mm-hmm. for commoditized goods. Things like if you want thumbtacks, well, there may be Thumbtack City and Sheboygan, Illinois, that is just...
If there's
you know,
not, there should be.
Yes, oh, well, there so should.
They're not a sponsor. And they also do have some local businesses that can have storefronts on there. So
does that count? Are we going to give Amazon some credit for that? Or?
I'm going to say no. Yes, it does help some of the, I guess, companies that have invested in delivery vehicles or freelancers, those kinds of things. But when I think of this, I'm thinking more of the brick and mortar.
The hyper-local.
Like the hyper-local, yeah. Like the bakery that partners with a bookstore.
Might not even have a website.
They might not even have a website, but they may have a Facebook page. And they may, you know, be next door to another business and they decide, hey, we're going to do something fun on this street or in this little shopping center mm-hmm. on Saturday. Let's all partner. That's what I'm thinking about in terms of strengthening the community. I think you know, it kind of like it's helping the community in terms of the economy, keeping the dollars local, and then also helping your other local business owners.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Number two, support a charitable cause.
Mm. Oh, that's a great reason.
Kind of related. It sort of falls mm-hmm. on top of the category, strengthen the local community, you know, because the nonprofits in a community are one of the backbones of that particular town or that particular area.
I love that idea. And actually, there are a couple of examples. There's like, it's called Partners Card. And like, if you have this card, because you've donated to this organization and you show it to the participating local businesses, you get a discount.
To get out of jail.
So you have this card and it's like a guaranteed coupon, guaranteed discount, and you've already given to the charity and the obviously business to be listed as a vendor.
Win-win.
Yeah, it's a win-win. So yeah, I think that's a good reason to partner with other businesses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, number three is enter a new market or exploit new revenue streams.
Oh.
You may have something synergistic going on with mm-hmm. this business that you're partnering with. They may make part of something that you make.
Right, right.
You know, and make it, they don't make the tape, they make it sound better. You know, it's like the old BASF.
Yeah.
So that's one of the...
I still don't know what they do.
BASF?
Yeah, all those ads back in the 80s and 90s.
Aren't they, like, gone?
Well, they're gone.
Nobody
knows
it.
They made Gone better. It was the best Gone ever took place. They don't leave. They make leaving better. They don't close. Okay, we could go on for around that one.
You digress.
Yeah, and that dates us because if you don't remember those commercials, then you're probably much younger than we are. But those were like everywhere. But anyway, so tell me more about this expanding your audience or revenue stream.
Yeah, whether your complementary business is mm-hmm. truly complementary or whether they're a competitor, there may be a new source of revenue, a new customer base that neither one of you individually would necessarily have access to. You might lack the resources. Both of you might be too small mm-hmm. And not scalable. But if you combine your efforts, you can come to the point where you're both able to service that market with your combined assets.
Yeah, I love that idea. I think that really is the motivating factor, I think, for a lot of businesses that would like get them to want to do this. Yes, supporting the community is great. Supporting a charity is great. But if you can use this as an opportunity to reach new people, find new like revenue sources, expand without having to invest a lot, but rather piggybacking and sharing each other's audience, I think that's where the motivation comes from. And I mean, hopefully the other things happen too. But as a small business, that's a smart strategy.
Yeah.
You know, it gets people to try your business if they like this other business.
Sure. Absolutely. You know?
So let's talk a little bit about some examples of this. We kind of talked a little bit as you went through, but like local restaurants, a lot of cities will do like restaurant week. Usually during a slower time of the year, like maybe in August or something like that.
Maybe during a pandemic.
Or during a pandemic.
Yes.
They'll do restaurant week, and that's where they make a big to-do. The city will basically, or the tourism department, whatever, will incur a lot of the promotional costs. You just have to participate, and you come up with something.
Well, kind of co-op it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, so it's kind of like the American Express small business. Yeah, a lot of times you need to be a vendor who takes American Express to participate.
American Express is not a sponsor of Couples Inc.
Thank you. But it's like there are other entities that are taking on the burden of raising awareness. But It's like, hey, during restaurant week, you let them know, hey, during that week, we're going to offer a discount on, you know, or free fries, or we're going to offer free dessert or free something. You are contributing your product in exchange for them being able to promote more tourism or local engagement. So I think Restaurant Week is a good example. Any, like I said, small, you know, the shop small strategies. We have like 4 local bookstores, which we are very lucky in our area.
Mm-hmm.
They are partnering, and they've created a bookstore crawl, kind of like what you used to do, like bar crawl.
Like a pub crawl. Yeah.
And they're creating this promotion.
So you can drink the books.
Wow. And they're all competitors. But there are variations. One's mainly a used bookstore. One's, you know, they're different kind of audiences, but they're all book lovers. So you get them together, it becomes an event. Everyone is enjoying Independent Bookstore Day, and they're going from bookstore to bookstore.
Do you pedal the cart, everybody?
You take a bookmobile.
The bookmobile?
No, you don't.
Well, that would be great. I like where you're going with that.
I know, but that's the kind of thing that you can do to partner with each other. Or there are other kinds of partnerships. Again, you don't have to be in the same industry, but again, maybe it's the same audience. So maybe you are, I guess, a business that sells to families. So you come up with something. So you say you're a toy store, or you have a bookstore that's mainly for kids, or you know, something else. You might partner with a family restaurant or a bounce house group or something like that. Yeah. And you do a family fun event or a family fun weekend that you partner with these other businesses. Or geographically, we've seen places like a whole street might, you know, close down, or a little shopping area, and this becomes like a, you know, a festival, and they're all partnering together because geographically they have something in common. I mean, have you mainly worked at businesses that are not retail minded.
Right.
So you haven't really had any examples.
Professional service businesses.
Mine comes from having worked in nonprofits and often coordinating.
Another professional service.
Yeah. So we didn't really sell anything, but we often coordinated with local businesses. And if you can, I mean, that's a triple win. If you can partner and tie it into a cause, that's like, you know, win-win-win.
Triple win.
Triple win. Why do you think businesses might be hesitant, though, to partner? I mean, I get it if they're worried that there are competitors.
Yeah, in the world of business, often if you are perceived as being the first to make a gesture toward a competitor, that may be looked upon as compromise or some sign of weakness. And we've heard about the business world as a jungle before. So, you know, there are still those ideas and those kind of, for lack of a better term, old school thoughts and old school perceptions about it. We don't reach out to other businesses that do the same business as us. Mm-hmm. Well, sure you do. You've got trade organizations that you go through. You probably have friends that work at other businesses that do the same thing. Maybe you went to school together. Maybe you met each other at a convention or whatever. Yeah, you're going to know some of your competitors, and it only makes sense, really, to kind of, you know, do a hostile takeover in a subtle way. No, it really makes sense to do that reach out. And if nothing else, the two of you can open up a dialogue that way, and it may lead to something down the road that's really good for the community.
But I guess it's just something to think about, is if, as you're a business owner, who might you be able to partner with? And is it something that could benefit your business, benefit the community, or benefit a charity?
Mm-hmm. Our interview segment for this episode features a conversation with Rose Law Firm partner Mary Buckley, who's an employment law specialist, on the importance of employee handbooks. Mary, thanks for joining us. Why is it important for even a small business or a micro business to have an employee handbook?
Yeah, so happy to answer that. And first of all, thank you all for having me on the podcast. I'm excited to be here. Everyone's going to be riveted by employee handbook talk. But to get to your question, it's important for even small businesses to have an employee handbook. First and fundamentally, a handbook is always going to be your building block or the foundation upon which you will grow, because most small businesses are going to grow into medium-sized businesses and large businesses. So you want this solid foundation in place of these are our policies, this is what we do, and grow from there. On another level, you want an employee handbook, even if you're a small business, because the employee handbook is meant to convey important information to employees about something they're supposed to do or something that is expected of them, or if they have problems, this is where they should go. So there are many more reasons why you should have a handbook, but it's important even if you're a small business to have one, because even small businesses are going to be subject to the various employment laws, discrimination laws, wage and hour laws. So it's important to have things in place, whether it's an official handbook form or even just some policies put together that you may give out separately. It's important to have that foundation in place and to build on it from there.
You mentioned a few things that would be in a handbook, but what are the main, like, you must have these things in a handbook? And as a little bit of a sidebar, ooh, legal term, are there any examples of, like, a company that just went way too far and had, like, you know, 5,000 or 10,000 pages or anything like that? Like, you know, how big is this document?
Yeah, so I'll give you a classic lawyer answer, right? It all depends. So if with respect to, like, what should be in an employee handbook, it really depends on the size of the company and the specific industry you are in. You know, if you're doing more on the construction side, you don't need a detailed confidentiality section or proprietary information section, because your employees are not handling sensitive data like someone who's in IT is handling. So it really depends what you put in there. What is critical to being in the handbook largely will depend on the business you're in and the size of the business you have. With that being said, I would always, always, always recommend to have a timekeeping policy in there, how employees clock in, how they clock out, telling them, you know, not to work when they're not clocked in and to report all hours worked. That is a very important policy because you have to keep those records. And so having a policy that details how you clock in, how you clock out, what's expected, that's going to be a very important policy that I will always recommend is in an employee handbook. Another one is going to be a harassment and discrimination prevention policy. Almost every employer is subject to Title VII, or, you know, if you're in Arkansas, the Arkansas Civil Rights Act, almost everyone is, or the ADA, Americans with Disability or Age Discrimination Act, almost every employer or a lot of employers are subject to that. So having something in your policy about this is what discrimination and harassment is based on protected status like age or race, and this is how you, these are the steps you take to report it. Because and I've noticed this sometimes with smaller businesses, they won't have this in their handbook and something will happen and the employee says, well, I didn't know what to do. So instead of, like, letting the company look at it, I just went to the EEOC, which they have the right to do. But it does give the, you know, having something in it that says this is how you report harassment and we need to know harassment and it's not tolerated is something you always want in your handbook, because it guides employees to what they need to do and what is harassment and how to report it. Another thing I would say is you want an equal employment opportunity statement in your handbook saying we, you know, don't make any decisions on the basis of any protected status. An accommodation policy, how someone is to request an accommodation, you know, whether it's disability or religion, you know, what's the process and what's the steps you go through. And again, a policy on pay, which kind of also goes back to timekeeping, how employees will get paid, when they're going to get paid, and if they have an issue with their pay, like say there was a deduction or they don't think they're paid fully, who they need to contact to report it. And some of that is kind of attacking issues before they become issues. Like telling an employee how to report issues with pay saves you heartache down the road when they decide to sue you and never told you there was a problem with their pay and they're suing you because of their pay, right? So, you know, if they're saying these are all hours I worked and then later they're saying, well, I worked more, then you have a defense to say, well, you said, you know, you were supposed to follow this policy and then you signed off saying these are all the hours you worked. Just to completely keep talking, because that's what attorneys do, if, with respect to examples of extremely elaborate handbooks, I looked through, and I do have some that are very long, but I've never seen one that's 5,000 pages, thankfully. I'd probably just resign if I got that handbook from a client to look at, because that is wild. I have seen some long ones. I've seen some 300-page ones that are pretty long, and a lot of it can, not all of it, but a good part of it can be taken out. And generally, if it's going to be 300 pages, I'm expecting you're in multiple states and you have separate state addendum for each of those states. If you're in one state, if you're in one state, you should not have a 300-page handbook, unless, again, it's specific to your industry and there's things you have to put in there. Like if you're a bank, there's some False Claims Act reporting policies you have to put in your handbook, which can make it longer.
Yeah, so that does make sense. You can't just use one template for all things because you may have very specific things. But that is kind of interesting that it's not just like some people think, oh, it's just to, you know, protect, you know, the employer, but it's really protect both sides. It allows a problem to be solved quicker for the person, but it also protects the company from having to pay legal bills or fines later that could have been done in-house. That makes a lot of sense for people to have them.
Yeah, I said most employers are not trying to not accurately pay you, and they're not trying to have you work off the clock. Like they want you to be accurately, you know, reporting your time, following the policies they have, and they want to make sure you're paid for all hours you worked. I mean, that's they don't want to not do that.
In your experience, what do you think is the gold standard of how often a manual should be updated?
Every year. It's people find that kind of painstaking and frustrating that they need to do it every year, but every year, employment laws change more frequently than other laws. You have local regulations coming in, state regulations, a change in what the National Labor Relations Board is dictating can be in handbooks. So you really need to update it every year or have someone look at it at least every year.
Does it have to tie into a fiscal year or calendar year? How does that affect anything?
No, it doesn't affect anything. Unfortunately, we're at the wit and whim, and it'll all depend on, you know, what the board does for some handbook stuff and then what states do, and it'll depend on when they're doing it. So it's just, you know, the thing about it, if you update it annually, if you do it every year, then when a big shift happens, there's a lot less work to do to get your handbook up to par. Because if I looked at your handbook last in 2020, there's going to be a lot more changes I'm making to it now than if I last looked at it in 2023 or 2022.
I'd imagine you'd have a whole pandemic section now. Yeah. So with all this stuff going on, and I know you may have a biased opinion on this as an attorney who focuses on this, but is professional help required when doing a handbook?
Yes. And I'll do a little caveat, right? This classic attorney stuff. It is required. And I'm not saying you can write a timekeeping policy without an attorney looking at it. And you can write a discrimination policy. I mean, that one I probably would recommend an attorney look at a discrimination one, but you can write a timekeeping. You can write, there are several policies you can put in a handbook, like things you're doing today that you haven't written down, you can write down and put in a handbook. But there are so many things that just for me, for example, I've probably drafted and revised over 300 handbooks. I've seen a lot of them, and I can look at that and tell you this will work, this won't work, or this is going to be a problem because this is what the law now says, or this is how they're interpreting these provisions in handbooks. And a good example is, you know, the National Labor Relations Board. They have taken a lot of issues with a lot of handbooks' code of conduct section. And if you don't have an attorney looking at that, then you may have things in your handbook that could cause headaches for you down the road, whether you're a unionized employer or not. So that's why I would recommend it. And I know there are a lot of, like, people who use payroll software, those companies, I think, offer handbooks. But you still need to go, even if you use one of them, you still need to go through and make sure what you're putting out there is accurate for your business and you're actually going to follow it. So if you have something in your handbook that says we do annual reviews every year and you actually don't do those, then you need to take that out of your handbook. So there's no one size fits all, really. So it really has to be what you want for your company and what's going to work. even small businesses, I guarantee you, you have policies and practices in place. You just haven't written them down and put them in a handbook form. So don't let the phrase employee handbook scare you from putting down in paper what your current practices are and then going from there. Like, you got to create the starting point and then go from there. But I think people get kind of worried about, oh, it needs to be very formal. And it doesn't. You know, write down what you're doing now and then put it in and then get it to where it's okay, we can give this to employees.
Yeah, we really appreciate you taking the time to kind of go over some of this stuff. I'm sure we could spend forever talking about it, but we will definitely bring you on again. But we wanted to find out a little bit more about the employee handbooks. I know a lot of small business owners are probably a bit befuddled by it, but we appreciate you trying to boil it down to the main points for us.
Yeah, thanks, Mary.
Hi, I'm Jody.
I'm Glenn.
We want you to follow us.
Not like following a cult.
No.
No, 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 no. We want you to follow our show.
Yeah, Couples Inc. is lots more fun than a cult.
Yeah, unlike most cults, Couples Inc. will never ask you for all your earthly possessions.
Plus, there's no ritualistic initiation or re-education or any of that stuff. All you have to do is follow Couples Inc. on Facebook and set up automatic downloads for Couples Inc. on Apple, Spotify, or any of your favorite streaming services.
That way, you'll never miss an episode.
Never, ever again.
Hey, Glenn.
Hey, is it the water cooler, huh, Jody?
Yeah.
We haven't been here in a little bit.
Well, we thought we might talk a little bit about that big event that happened recently.
The eclipse.
The eclipse.
Yeah, well, we talked about it before it happened. Now we're going to talk about it after.
Yeah, that was the quiz. And now I think we're going to talk a little bit about some of the insights, some of the news, if you will, of the eclipse.
You've got news. I have perception.
I have my own perceptions, too.
Okay. Well, right. This is perception news, then.
Perception news. All right.
The first one I've got is the shift in colors when totality occurred or when we were getting close to it. There's a name for that.
Oh, there is?
Yeah, that's called the Purkinje.
Okay, are you
shift.
Sure? Purkinje?
Purkinje.
Shift.
Yeah, it's named after a Czech scientist who first noted it. I think he lived in the early part of the 19th century, back in the 1800s.
Ah.
Yeah, Purkinje. And in fact, he was so famous, the story goes, that if you wanted to write to him, all you had to do was put his name on the envelope and it'd get to him. So I guess in the 1800s, that was
Purkinje.
Yeah, he was like the line leader or whatever, the guy that was.
I hate that I didn't know that name, given how popular he once was. Now, is that why our neighbor wore a green shirt? She said that colors would change, and that she said, but I didn't see any change. But she said it was supposed to have a bit of an effect.
Yeah, well, it makes the reds and yellows mute. But it really makes blue and purple colors and greens pop. And I noticed that, you remember, I remarked about the sky.
The sky and the trees.
Yeah, it looked like a Pink Floyd album cover.
Persnickety, right?
It's a Purkinje.
Right.
There's no persnickety. Oh, he might have been. He was a scientist. Who knows?
I can't remember that name. I'm going to call him Persnickety. But, I think his friends probably did, so it's okay.
Persnickety. Purkinje.
So here's my takeaway. We told people repeatedly not to look at the sky without the glasses. We have a neighbor. We have an 8-year-old. We told her repeatedly, don't look up. Not 2 seconds after I was telling her not to look up without the
you
glasses.
Looked up, didn't you?
I looked up.
Why?
I was like, I don't, because I wanted to make sure, because when the glasses, you really can't see anything much. And when I was like, well, I don't want to look up and have the trees block my view. So let me position myself and then put the safety glasses on.
Yeah, it's especially hard with those glasses if you are driving somewhere and you want to see the sun. You have to make sure that you know where it is at all times so you can look up.
You didn't drive with those glasses on.
Sure. Just the best view is from the road because there's no trees. You get on the
that
freeway.
Is true. Yeah, all right.
With those glasses on,
What's your next
it's
one?
My iPhone. I took some pictures and they all came out like there was just a like some kind of dirt on the lens and there was the sun.
Yeah, there was like a little, like
so
it looked like a rock was floating in front of the sun,
yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess it focuses And so it moves it around or something?
You have to do something with the exposure and all of that kind of rigmarole. And it's not supposed to be like that. I'm not a photographer.
I know. Isn't that crazy? We're complaining that you have a phone that can take a picture. I mean, think about back in the day during Persnickety's year. First of all, we had to explain what a photo is, right?
Yes, because I think he died before they became common.
So there you go. So there's a lot we have to explain.
Yes.
All right. My second one is the wildlife reaction. We heard a lot about this leading up to it, that, you know, dogs might get a little panicky. And then our neighbor's dog, he wasn't too panicky. Or was it a she?
She.
She, yeah. That's right. Wasn't too panicky, but I did notice the birds very quiet.
Yes.
And then when the sun came back out, it felt like, even though it's 2 p.m, it sounded like morning.
Yeah. It's just like sunrise.
My biggest fear, though, is that with the rest of the world thinking, or the animal life thinking it's night, that mosquitoes were going to come out. I was very concerned.
Just for a couple of seconds.
Just for a couple of seconds.
Yeah. And there was a huge swarm, and then there wasn't.
And then there wasn't. Well, and you know I attract them, so I was surprised I didn't get some bites. But it was cool to hear it's like, oh, well, that was a very quick night. All right. Morning, you know, morning sounds again.
Yeah. And I forgot to sleep. That was the worst.
I know.
I think from now on, they should name North American eclipses like they do with hurricanes or storms of any kind. Volcanoes sometimes have names. And some of my ideas, you may pick them up and run with them. Shadow McShadowton. Shady Eclipse.
Love that.
Sunny Blockout. We have an alert update. The eclipse sunny blockout is forecast to strike the middle of the country sometime in the next 3 hours.
Oh.
But they are so forecast. I mean, they have so many years ahead of time. They've been talking about this one for years and years.
I know.
And, you know, they just don't do that with tornadoes or hurricanes. I don't know why.
What, have years and years to plan?
Yeah.
I know. It just seems
so
unfair.
Convenient.
But it does seem bad that, you know, they're the ones that get the names, where those amazing, miraculous, beautiful things don't get the fun names.
Yeah.
Like
Persnickety. Well, we can start with those three names and just work up an entire roster.
Our way up. Well, my last one was how wonderful it was to have an excuse just to stop what we were doing, go outside with our neighbors, and take it all in.
Yeah.
It was everybody. I mean, a friend of mine, they had gone to rallies.
Not a sponsor of Couples Inc.
And because they got lunch, and then everyone in the parking lot's looking up. You know, you didn't have to be at a special event.
Did they all have special glasses?
They just use the wrappers.
Yes.
But look through a fry or something. But it's like, you know, we were in our neighborhood. Some places had big events, you know, but for a moment, anybody who was in the range to see it kind of had an excuse to stop what they're doing and just look up and just be amazed.
Buy the world a Coke.
Thanks for listening to Couples Inc., a podcast helping couples work better together.
We put out new episodes the first and third Wednesday of each month. But to make sure you don't miss a show, subscribe using your favorite streaming service. We're on all of them.
And if you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, go ahead, share it with others, post it on social media, or leave us a rating or review.
And be sure to visit our website, couplesincpodcast.com. To learn more about us, review show notes, or leave us a message.
Until next time.